So I said to Big Hair, why don't we take this supercars in review thing and go one more step and rate the drivers? To which he said, how? Well, here's how, Niv. It would be simple if we only had to measure one race, but we can't do that since most supercar weekends have more than one race. And this year, it's also been a battle of tyre life. So we have to look at the whole weekend as one picture, and that means one great race can be spoiled by poor effort in another. We also take into account the relative position of each team against the other. And that means that we're not saying Team Sydney is going to be Red Bull Racing Australia. So, how does it work? 10-point weekend would be perfect. Great racecraft, a sensational implementation of strategy, and scoring the best results possible for that car and that team. A 9 or 8's a very good weekend, barely putting a foot wrong on the way to good points haul, but little spots for improvement. 7 and 6 points is around a pass score, we think, with a few mistakes dragging the score down. 5 and below, there's room for improvement. And that is how the Supercars in Review ratings works.
Oh, welcome everybody. I'm joined by Andrew Clark for our driver ratings of the second leg of the Darwin doubleheader, or the Hidden Valley. How you going, Clarky?
Yeah, not too bad. We're going to see if we can create a bit of a storm today. I think some of the ratings might be a little bit more controversial than in the past, so we'll see where we end up and then obviously tell you where everybody's at the end of the, so far in this season.
If anybody's up for a bit of controversy, this is the right show to listen to.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And we might even get a little more controversial because I think some people have been cruising a little bit under the radar and we'll turn the spotlight on them over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, we'll kick this off. First up, Alex Davison. You gave him a rating of 7.
Yeah, I think, and same with Chris Pither, by the way. So the two Team Sydney cars, I reckon they're pretty ordinary cars. And I think that these two drivers are extracting the absolute best they can out of it. If you look at it, you know, we've got a qualifying average of 21 for Alex Davison and a finishing average of 20. And Chris Pither's averaged 22 on qualifying and 20.7 on the race. You know, they haven't really moved up the order during the races or anything like that. But, you know, that qualifying performance between the two guys shows you where the cars are at. So I think, you know, if we look back at our criteria, which you would have heard at the start of the show, you know, they've done what they could do with what they had.
Yeah, I think they acquitted themselves quite well. Okay, well, Chris Pither, yes, 7. That's it for Team Sydney. Moving on to Matt Stone Racing, Gary Jacobson, you gave him a 5.
Yeah, I'm going to be quite brutal about this, but every time somebody incurs an in-race penalty, I think is fair and justified because I don't think they always get it right, they're going to drop a point. And he got 2 15-second penalties. So if we said he came out with a 7, which, you know, would be marginal because I think that car's not so bad, then he drops down to 5. So, you know, one was a really clumsy knock on Macaulay Jones in race 2. So, you know, I thought he didn't really place himself in that greater spot. Qualifying, you know, he was averaged 19.7 and his average finish was 20.7. So he went backwards by in the race as well.
Well, his teammate, Zane Goddard, you've given him a 6.
Yeah, these guys, you know, the Zane Goddard-Jake Kostecki connection, I think they're going to struggle all year simply because they're in the car one week and not in the car the next week. So they're going to be a work in progress. Until they get a regular drive that's week in, week out, we're not going to see the best of those guys. That said, you know, he finished 21st in all three races, which is quite bizarre. So that was his finishing position. And he qualified an average of 21.7. So he did improve over the course of the races. But, you know, we could get a little bit more out of him, I think, if we got a little more time consistency.
So you feel that he got the extra point over his teammate because the inconsistency, so he's done quite well considering that he's only there for every second race, or he actually just did better?
Well, I think he did better because he didn't hit people off the track and get 15-second penalties.
Good point.
That puts him in front right from the start.
Okay. Next, we're moving on to Cali Racing, and the first one is Andre Heimgartner. You scored him a 7.
Yeah, the Calis are confusing me. I think the car looks like it's got some sort of major problem and we don't quite know what that problem is, and nor do the drivers clearly. I think both Andre and Rick spent a lot of time scratching their heads with their teammates. But if we take the most basic way of assessing a driver is what did you do compared to your teammate, he's fairly solidly beaten his teammate. So, you know, he qualifying average of 10.7, so effectively 12th on the grid, and he's finished at 11.0 is his finishing average. So one top 10 finish, one top 10 qualifying, whereas his teammate didn't get any top 10s. So on that score, we've got him up to 7.
Yes. Well, that brings us to Rick. He got a 6.
Probably yeah, because he was beaten by his teammate.
Yeah, it was that was it. Just beaten because his
teammate. Fairly simple, yep. Yep. So if his teammate's better than him and he did a 7, then Rick can get no more than 6.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Next, Scott Pye from Team 18. He's got a 9. I would assume that's because he was up there. He was in, I saw a lot of him on the weekend. Qualifying was good. Race, well, podiums, 9. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, let's make the assumption that the start line problem was, in fact, a clutch problem. His first race was pretty impressive. He's gone from rear of the field, having been lucky not to be cleaned up and become an exploding fireball like we've seen in the past on start line stallings. And he's raced really well with that car. So he ended up 13th in that race. But then the next two races, he got a pair of podiums, you know, and he qualified okay. You know, I think if he gets his qualifying, his single lap performance up, then we'll see even more from him. But take it and say, you know, these guys are the second string 888 team. So they're using 888 equipment that's, you know, borrowed and or bought actually and essentially structured by their team. Yet he's effective, almost outpaced both Jamie Wincup and Shane Van Gisbergen across the weekend. And I think it's quite an impressive effort. And, you know, 9, I think, is fairly well justified for him.
Well, you look at his qualifying. He qualified an 8th, a 3, and an 8th with an average of 6.3. But in the last race, he qualified 8th and finished 3rd. I thought that was pretty good effort in that last race.
It is, and interestingly, his finishing average is 6.3 as well, but that's largely because of that first race with the stalled car on the grid. You know, so he dropped 5 spots in that first race, but he picked up 5 spots in the last race. So, you know, pretty even in terms of race to there. But I just think, you know, if he hadn't had that problem on the grid, we would have seen a much better result and possibly triple podium for him.
Yep, I'm there with you. What, do you reckon he might have got a 10 if he hadn't have stalled it on the start line?
I think he's qualified. Flying let him down for getting a 10 because he can still get a 10 even if they haven't done things. Because, as I say, let's assume that what we've been told about the start is right and that it's not his fault. He shouldn't be punished for that in terms of his driving. But you're not going to get a 10 if you're qualifying 8th, and that's unless you're Jack Smith. Yeah, if you're going to finish 8th, you qualify 8th in a car that can finish on the podium, then I think you can qualify a little bit higher. So that's where he's missing out a little bit at the moment. And I think even he acknowledges, I think there's an article talking about how he knows he's got to be absolutely perfect if he's going to knock off Scott McLaughlin. So he's starting to set his goals in the right place, which I really like the sound of.
Well, his teammate, Mark Winterbottom, you scored him an 8, only 1 point underneath him.
Frosty out-qualified Scott Pye.
In the average.
Yeah, he's got a qualifying average of 5.0, so he's qualified 7th, 5th and 3rd. He topped qualifying before the shootout on the Friday. So, you know, single lap speed, I think Frosty's pulling out what that car can do at the moment. Still could have expected a little more from the shootout from him, but, you know, 7th was okay. His racing, I think he was hampered a little bit by some of the strategy that was called on him, and that, you know, he raced well and we saw him doing some nice overtaking and all those sort of things, but a bit better strategy might have got him up towards the 9 to stick with Scott as well.
Yeah, just
sort of waiting for a podium, really.
I saw his race results. I mean, even with Scott having the stall on the start, finished 13th, Mark's finished 11th, and then the other races... Scott's finished ahead of him. Okay, it was probably down to that traffic. Mind you, I didn't mind that racing at the end with him.
No, I didn't. And I could have almost given him a 10 just for watching that qualifying. Weaving his way through those cars. I mean, that was just sensational footage. And I hope that Team 18's dug that out and stuck it up on their Facebook page or something.
If they do, I'll put it on my Facebook page because it was really good.
Yeah.
That brings us to BJR, the first of the big four. Teams, or the first of the teams with 4, and Nick Percat, you've scored Nick a 9.
Yeah, I think a really good weekend. Again, 2 weekends in a row in Darwin, he's been the innocent victim of somebody else's foolhardiness. And that cost him quite badly in the in race 17. Otherwise, he was on target for a podium there and possibly even more. I mean, you look at a Shane van Gisbergen has ended up finishing second and he ended up 13th. So, you know, there was possibilities for a much better effort there when you think about where they were and what was happening on the track. You know, Chaz Mostert, you know, was kind of a bit unfair on him, I thought, when he turned him around. So just there. But his driving was good, performed well. He's qualifying. You know, again, we want a little bit more out of him qualifying, which gets you out of that danger zone. But, you know, fifth when he was untouched in race one and a second in race three says he's done a pretty good job all round. So qualifying again, like Scott Pye, if he got his qualifying right, he might actually nudge a 10.
That brings us on to his teammate, Todd Hazelwood. Got him a 6. He was struggling with a troubled car all weekend.
Yeah, I think the car was something clearly wrong with the car, but what you've got to do in those situations is not let it get you down. And I'm not sure that he stayed on top of what was bugging him. But, you know, have a look at his qualifying. 19.3 is his average. So he's got 23rd, 18th and 17th when his teammate's qualifying average is 6.7. So there's clearly something wrong with the car's speed. And that said, you know, he raced okay. He got a 15.3 average on the races, you know, improved in each race. You know, I think he was the top of the improved driver. So he improved on average 4 positions in each of the 3 races, put him at the top of the field there. But when you're on a troubled day, I expect to see a little bit more mongrel, I think.
Next up, Macaulay Jones, 6 again. And, yeah, well, he was hit by Jacobson.
Yeah, he was. He was one of the reasons why Jacobson lost his points. He didn't go off on his own again this weekend like he did last week. But, again, it's all about qualifying. If you don't qualify well, you're in the trouble zone. So 18th, 16th and 23rd in qualifying. I think, you know, what is his second year in the class full-time? And driving the same car as Nick Percat, we should be starting to see him edge his way up the grid. So overall, I thought it was a bit of a disappointing weekend and, you know, nothing really pointed out to say bad effort. So, you know, that's about a 6.
Jack Smith, last of the 4 for the BJR team. He scored a 6. He's still learning.
Oh, very much so. Very young to the category, very young to the class. So, you know, on his evolution scale, did qualify last in every race, which is an interesting outcome for any young guy. And he drove around at the tail of the field. But the only interesting part for me was when he put the 4 fresh tyres on and became one of only a handful of guys to drop a 7 in the first race. So, you know, we're seeing some good signs. But again, the issue with the young guys is about consistency and consistency throughout the race as well as, you know, during a weekend.
Well, he may have qualified last for each race, but the thing is he didn't finish last in any of those races. Okay.
He's getting there.
That brings us to Walkinshaw Andretti United and Chaz Mostert. You scored him 7th. I reckon part of that's because he stuck the nose into Nick Percat.
Absolutely. That's 1 point off. Otherwise, he would have got an 8. I thought we saw the driving skills and the class of the guy in that first race with Mark Winterbottom, that lap they did side by side without touching each other except for folding mirrors in on each other to help the parking later on in the day. so I thought we saw some good class there, but it was such a clumsy move when he turned around Nick Percat, and it ruined Percat's day, obviously, and it ruined his with that 15-second penalty. So he would have had 3 top 10 finishes, which would have been a much nicer outcome than 2 top 10s and an 18th. And it was really one of those weekends where you didn't really notice him as such, but he just kept on sneaking his way up the order in the races and things. And, you know, so I thought not a bad day, not a bad effort, but, you know, you're going to turn somebody around like that, you're going to cop it.
And that brings us to his teammate, Bryce Fullwood. You've given him a 6. Why is that?
Well, it was a better weekend than last weekend in his home race, but there were just a couple of silly mistakes, I thought, that cost him badly, like particularly in race 16 with Fabian Coulthard, when, you know, Fabian was going up the inside of him, clearly with a better car, and Bryce just drifted out to the dirty line and drifted off the track and cost him many, many positions on the track. So, yeah, again, a learning thing. This is his first year, so growing daily. But probably without that little mistake, he might have ended up on a 7, but, you know, you've got to look at that and think, you know, you just should have done better there.
Well, that brings us to Erebus Motorsport and Anton Di Pasquale. You've given him a 6. I'm assuming he probably would have got a 7th if he hadn't got that penalty.
Maybe. Yeah, he's only got a 5-second penalty, but it still cost you a point in my view. Yeah, so he would have got a 7, but he won last weekend and he came in this weekend and he could only get 1 or 2 top 10 finishes, a 6th and a 9th. qualifying was all over the place as well. But interestingly, his races are very reflective of his qualifying. So he didn't pick up any spots at all in races 16 and 18, and he only picked up one spot in race 17 over his qualifying performance. So steady effort, nothing spectacular. Yeah, that's a six.
Kind of keeping your nose clean. Well, it brings us to his teammate, Dave Reynolds. He's got a five. He was out-qualified by Anton all weekend. I'm kind of surprised he kind of got a five. I hardly saw him.
Yeah, but he raced okay. He was the bottom line. So clearly, like Todd Hazelwood, unhappy with the car. But, you know, he just was there. There was nothing too special about anything he did. I thought he was off the boil a little bit. So, yeah, you got to be punished. Five's a fair whack, I reckon. And as you say, you could have even given him less.
Well, that brings us to Tickford Racing. And one of the stars of the series at the moment is James Courtney. You only gave him an eight.
Yeah, well, it was one of those ones where you sat down and thought he's had a really, really good weekend, and then you look at the results and you think he didn't have such a good weekend. certainly the fourth in the first race was great, but then seventh and 14th in the next races just dropped off the boil a little bit. So you can't go any more than eight with that sort of effort. But we know he's learning that car, he's learning the engineer, he's learning everything about it all. So I think that eight could easily become nines and tens in the next few races as he gets more and more on top of what he's doing. And, you know, personally, it's great to see him back near the front. He's a good personality in the sport. He's a nice bloke. At least I think he is. Some people think he's a bit of a tool, but I like him. And, you know, I think that he's done really well. So he's the on the track now. He's, you know, very short space of time become the leader at Tickford.
Lee Holdsworth, why did you give him a seven?
Well, he was very steady. He's got a finishing average of nine, which is only just behind James. And it was just a weekend. I think we expected quite a lot of the Tickford cars up in Darwin, and we really didn't see any of that return. The qualifying speed was missing, and the racing was just steady and consistent. So, you know, that's an average kind of performance. So we'll go seven there.
Cameron Waters, you gave a six. I thought he probably would have gotten a bit more than six. Okay. He was a bit clumsy with some of the stuff he did, and obviously lost a point or so, but I thought he still would have got a higher than a six.
If you're going to knock a corner off the car on a clumsy move, then I think you're lucky if you don't lose 2 points. You know, so that move on Jamie Wincup, you know, was just a bit clumsy. Probably good to do it, good to have a crack at it. If it comes off, it's great. But, you know, there's that big sausage curve there, and it jumps up in the air in front of you. So, you know, if you don't get it right, you're in trouble. And he didn't get it right, and he was in trouble. And so he ended up not finishing one race. The other races, he was good, third and fifth in the two races. You know, the punishment is for that mistake.
Oh, personally, I would have given him a point for trying it, because I'd like to see that more.
And you could put up an argument for all sorts of things there. But, yeah, great that he's having a go. And I'll never, you know, say anything bad to him for having a go at it, because he's a racing driver. And if he's not having a go at something like that, then he's no longer a racing driver, as Ayrton Senna would say. Yeah, good effort, but, yeah, it didn't work out, so you got to hit him.
It's all down to results, isn't it? Okay, that brings us to Jack LeBrock. And you give him the same score of six.
Yeah, could be a bit generous there, maybe, but he didn't make any mistakes except for the he got a penalty in race two for 5 seconds, but, you know, he finished 14th in that race overall. I think after winning a race a couple of rounds ago, you know, you just starting to expect a little bit more from him than we're seeing. He has, you know, 2 or 3 years into the series now, so I think we should be seeing a bit more consistency. And by consistency, I don't mean qualifying 15th in every race. I mean something a little bit different to that. So, you know, just starting to expect a little bit more from him, so he's starting to get measured by that.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the last two teams. The first one is Red Bull Racing, and Shane van Gisbergen, you've given an eight.
Yeah, very unhappy with his car on the first race, but still plucked an eight out of it, eighth position, which is an impressive effort. The second and the fifth were great as well in the other races, and certainly that qualifying run on the Sunday, you know, a second and a first when they gave him a new engine that actually worked. So he showed that he could put it up and chase and battle with Scotty McLaughlin if they give him the right car. And as I say, I think it was a pretty good effort overall. Bit disappointed with race 18, which is why it's only an eight and not a nine. But overall, a good weekend and a solid return to form for him, because I don't think he's been in the greatest form lately.
Well, his teammate, Jamie Wincup, you've only scored him a seven. Why'd you only score him seven?
Qualifying. Qualified eighth and seventh on the Sunday for finish of sixth and seventh in that day, as opposed to the Saturday where he qualified on pole and finished second. So, you know, you just expect a little bit more from a guy like Jamie Wincup. it's interesting that, you know, one day the 97 car is good and one day the 88 car is good. Unfortunately for Jamie, he did it on the day that there were two races.
I did see that.
But I think also the team itself, they're really struggling to turn that single lap speed that they've got into race pace. So they're getting good qualifying speed, as you saw. I mean, we got two pole positions to the team over the course of the weekend, but they just didn't have anything on Scott McLaughlin in the races. So, you know, they need to get their race package right.
Well, that's a segue into the DJR Team Penske team. And first cab off the rank, or first Uber off the rank, is Fabian Coulthard. You gave him a 7.
Yes. Well, he hit Bryce Forward, which cost him a penalty, and I think he was pretty lucky not to be punished a little bit more for that. But my biggest disappointment with him was the race to start with Shane Van Gisbergen, and I think that he should have been able to get him. I think he backed out of it a bit too easily, and I would have liked to see him just keep a bit more mongrel in the place and really challenge Giz over it. But the main thing was on... You know, you got a 14th and a 16th in qualifying when your teammates, you know, qualifying on the front row. So you're not giving yourself a chance for good race results if that's where you're going to qualify. And that's exactly what we saw. We saw a 10th and 11th in those races where he qualified poorly compared to a 4th when he qualified okay.
Yeah.
He did improve his positioning over the course of the races by an average of 3.7, but, you know, he shouldn't have been in that situation to start with.
Yeah, I reckon so. So he's telling me he's lost a couple of points. Some of it was for qualifying, some of it was for racing.
Yep.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, most of it was qualifying.
Cool.
Yeah, that qualifying performance is just not good enough when you've got a car like that. Unless they come out tomorrow and tell us there was something catastrophically wrong with the car. You know, we put the suspension in upside down. We put the left uprights on the right, you know. Then we'll give him some credit. But otherwise, we expected more.
Well, that brings us to the all-conquering Scott McLaughlin, and he's got, I think it's the first 10 you've ever given.
It is indeed the first 10 we've given. Last weekend we said we didn't think anybody could clean sweep a weekend this year the way the races were going, and then Scott McLaughlin's come out and clean sweeped a weekend.
Well,
if you're going to do 3 race wins, you've qualified on the front row in every race. So I think, you know, it's not quite a perfect weekend, but it's so close it's not funny.
Yeah, all I can see is ones and twos. One's for race.
Exactly, yeah.
And 2-1-2 for qualifying. Like, yep, okay, that's pretty fair.
Yeah, and he was racing well, and I think that he worked really hard to get a gap early on in every race and then paced himself, you know. So that's what a race driver needs to do, work out what the gap you need is for absolute safety and then just pace yourself through it and walk, you know, work around the race. And, you know, so he, along with his engineer and the team, they just did a sterling job and class of the field. And interestingly, we're doing this in an era where there's no questions over parity anymore. So all of the stuff that everybody was complaining about last year is gone. You know, they fixed that. They were quite diligent about getting it all sorted, yet he's still dominating. And I think, you know, it's part of that is down to his ability as a driver to extract everything from the car, and especially what he's doing in qualifying, because he's putting himself in a position where he can go out to win any race.
All right. That's the numbers for the final Hidden Valley round. What does that mean championships-wise?
If we call it our own little championship, because we're good enough of an ego to suggest that we've got one, Scotty McLaughlin's pulled well clear. So he's on 44 points accumulated so far this season to Nick Percat and Jamie Wincup on 39. With Mark Winterbottom another point back in 38. So that's the top four, which is an interesting mix. And if you think it's not that dissimilar to what's happening in the championship there as well. Chaz Mostert's on 37 in fifth spot. And then we've got Shane Van Gisbergen on 36. And then we've got Lee Holdsworth, Fabian Coulthard, Cameron Waters and Andre Heimgardner all on 34 points. So that battle at the bottom end of the top 10s is interesting, but very clear. Scott McLaughlin, so far this year, has been the class of the field, and that 5-point lead out in front is reflective of that.
Oh, yeah, he's like no one else is in the 40s. There's holy mackerel, there's a heap in the 30s. It goes all the way down to 19s. From second to 19th, they're in the 30s. Scott McLaughlin has put himself 44 points.
Well, if you look at it, Scott's been averaging 8.8 points over the course of the season. So we've got a ninth and ninth and a ninth for the first three rounds, and then the seventh in round 5 when we punished him badly for that mistake that cost him all the spots, and then the 10 on the weekend. So, you know, his performances have been very consistent, as has Nick Percat, for instance, in second spot. But Nick had a pretty ordinary first round, which has cost him badly. But he's got eights and eights and nines after that, with only a six in the first round. So pretty good effort all round there, I think.
Okay, I'm going to read out. Scott McLaughlin's at the front with 44 points. Nick Percat's on 39 points. Jamie Wincup's in third on 39 points as well. Mark Winterbottom's up there in 38. 50 is Chaz Mostert, 37. Shane Van Gisbergen, 36. Lee Holdsworth in seventh on 34. Equal with Fabian Coulthard on 34 in eighth. And in ninth, Cameron Waters is on 34. And in 10th, Adrian Heimgartner is on 34. Explain to me, there's four of them on 34. What gives them their position on the ladder?
Well, nothing. They should all be equal seventh if we get into that part of it. But if you're doing a countback system, you know, Fabian Coulthard would be higher up the order because he's got that ninth spot, the 9 points that he picked up at the last round. So, yeah, you could argue Fabian's 34 is probably better than the others. But that said, you know, would you rather have consistency or would you rather have peaks and troughs? So you can also sit back and say that, you know, Andre Heimgartner's been really good and really consistent, as has Cam Waters and Lee Holdsworth. So it's all up to you to work out how you like it all. But if you do a countback on the highest score, then Fabian's ahead. If you want to do it on consistency, then the other guys are more consistent.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, can you put these point scores up on our Facebook page? And everybody can then have their opinion on it. Also, we're going to put a photo of a Kia Stinger up there, and we want anybody to go and have a test drive and tell us what they think based from the last
give us absolutely,
comments.
Yeah.
Give us your comments and we'll talk about them.
Beautiful. Sounds good.
Okay, Kaiki, appreciate the time. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. And, we'll bring on Townsville. We're all geared up for FNQ.